I have a voice, simple and clear. It speaks the truth for all to hear. It gives me hope, it gives me faith. It lifts me up, it keeps me safe. I have a voice, it's mine alone. It comforts me, it is my own.
I'm your co-host, Danielle Colangelo.
I'm your co-host, Tony Williams II. This is a podcast about the adventures Danielle and I have as dance teachers and choreographers living here in New York City. We will be sharing our experiences and all their ridiculous and hilarious truths.
However, to keep the identity of the students and companies we worked for safe, we won't be mentioning any by name, and if we do, they will be changed.
That being said, let's get into today's topic, style. So we kind of wanted to talk about the specific style or energy or feel that a choreographer has, because they kind of shape the world as we know it when it comes to the dance world. Mm-hmm. So let's start with what makes you different, or like what makes a certain choreographer different from the rest of them. Mm. For me, I know that I'm very like pedestrian, and then out of nowhere. I don't know. It's hard to. I constantly still struggle with the like, what makes me different than other choreographers type of feel myself, mm-hmm. just because I know that I have a very pedestrian type of feel to it, and then I'll have like a crazy section. And then it's, like, very pedestrian, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that just comes from the nature of me doing so much jazz and street jazz and hip-hop. Like, I end up choreographing a lot of, like, social styles that are just one step away from social dances.
I think mine's still shifting and changing. You know, we're both still very young, so we're still moving and grooving. I would say a lot of mine is very pedestrian, too. I realize I just really like that honest pedestrian style. I had this conversation with someone. I don't like, if in terms of looking at something like a movie or a musical or a theater piece in particular, because a dance concert is kind of on a separate level, mm-hmm. I don't like having a dance number for the sake of having a dance number. I think that if there's going to be dance involved, it's progressing the story. It is telling the story through the movement and continuing to shape the characters. And so I think that's why I like very organic pedestrian movement. And I also definitely like, I like choreographing for theater. Even when I do straight dance pieces for dance concerts or showcases, I like to tell a story. Even if I do a jazz or contemporary piece, I like it to have some sort of a story and emotion and an arc that the dancers go through. So I think that's kind of where I am. I definitely like to storytell. I like to keep it real and organic. But again, like I said, it's definitely, you know, it changes as we work and learn more.
That definitely makes me think of someone I used to dance with in college where he was a beautiful dancer. Technique and, you know, solid lines for days. But, like, he had no emotion behind his dancing whatsoever. And I remember he was, like, messing around in the studio, and he, like, recorded it and posted it on Facebook. And, like, everyone was like, this is really pretty, but, like, what's the intent behind the dance? Like, what are you dancing for? And he was like, well, sometimes you just dance to be pretty. And everyone was like, okay, that's a thing, but, like, we didn't even get that. Like,
right, exactly. No and emotion. I've talked with this at, like, meetings I've had with other dance teachers where it's like sometimes you choreograph a dance, you dance just for it to be a beautiful dance or just to like hit the dance hard have it be like a really like hard hitting dance, but there is still intent behind that. And if I don't see that like that excitedness, that beauty, that like you're hitting it, then that doesn't come across. It doesn't have to necessarily be a story, but even if it is dance for dance sake in terms of a showcase or a concert, there's still something. You don't just go and you're not just like, great, here's this amazing piece of fun music, go out and be angry. Like, there, there's still like, well, why? Like,
why are we doing
what this? Are you, right, I guess so. And
I don't know. I completely agree, because I feel like even every big name choreographer, you know, be it ballet, hip hop, jazz, like everyone, like it all goes back to storytelling. And so when the storytelling elements aren't there, you know, a basic beginning, middle, and end, when those aren't there, I just feel very detached from it.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big sucker for a good story. Like, yeah. That's my...
And I think that's why it, like, that for me, again, it doesn't have to. We're not saying, like, a dance has to have... Okay, I'm going to rephrase. I do believe a dance has to have intent and a background. I do believe that in some sort of a way. But I'm not saying every dance has to have this full, big story arc.
Oh, yeah.
But for me, I would say what makes me different, what makes me style, like, my style is I do like to storytell. And I think that comes from, like... growing up, like, that's kind of, like, I would get a lot of compliments about, like, wow, Danielle, like, maybe, like, I remember, for instance, being in fourth grade and being in hip-hop class, and in one of the dances I did, there's a section where it was just going to be a trio, and it was these two, this brother and sister who were, like, these amazing dancers, and then it was between me and this other girl, and we had an audition for the spot, and we were in fourth grade, and I remember my dance teacher, his name was Frank, telling me, like, I picked you, Danielle, because you just have more, like, emotion. Like, you're showing more, like, you're hitting the steps, and, like, you're showing that through your face, and, like I'm not just staring at, like, this, like, there's nothing, you know, this blank, wet rag. And so, for me, I think that's something that stuck with me, and something I knew that I was good at was being able to portray the emotion and the story and the intent, and maybe that's why it's shaped me to, like, that's what's important to me when I do choreography.
Oh, I definitely agree, because I know... one of my big differences is that, like, it's just, everyone's always, one of my biggest compliments, it goes, oh, you make it look so simple. Or, you know, you make us non-dancers look like we're dancers. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, I like pedestrian movement can be dance, and it is dance.
It is.
Like, that whole movement through the 80s where there was a lot of, you know, like, walking on stage or running. Like, I love, like, right now I'm doing, for the modern residency, there's a couple, we're just straight running in it. Because pedestrian movement, to me, matters a great deal.
Yes.
And I think that also, like, goes into our next part of, like, what makes you similar to other characters, to other choreographers. I don't like non-complimentary moves. So, like, I'm definitely one of those people that, like, I love ballet and it's beautiful. There are certain ballet moves that I don't enjoy choreographing simply because they go against the natural flow of the body or the natural flow of the movement.
Yeah.
And that's why, like I said, I'm very similar because I fall under, like, the, you know, the Lamone, the release techniques. Like, everything is, like, flowy and moving. And that just, like, anytime, like, there's a harsh stop to that, or I see choreo, you know, where it's all flowing and pretty, and then they go in and put a move that just does not make any sense.
Yeah.
That, you know, because, and it, a lot of times it usually happens because, especially for, like, competition or younger levels, it's usually this child learned this trick. You know, this child learned a fuerte, like fuertes.
Yeah, so fuertes, let's put it in.
Fuertes rarely actually belong in dances.
Right. They don't.
They really don't. Like, I think they I would much rather take a pirouette or an attitude turn, or there are numerous other turns, but rarely does a fuerte actually fit.
Yeah.
And usually when they show up, it's because the child just learned how to do a fuerte, or they can do them really well.
So let's put it in the dance.
So let's throw it in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think what makes me similar is definitely, like what makes me different. Like, I like to storytell. I like to, what are we working towards in this dance? And I think I fall under a category with a lot of other choreographers. But that's also a great thing, because those are people that I can look up to and aspire to be and take from their work and learn from their work and hopefully have the chance to maybe work with them one day. So, yeah.
That's cool. So, okay, well, then that goes into... how do you, and granted, I totally agree with you, we're still finding our voice, but how do you think you found your voice as of right now?
I think it was my senior year of college. I had to produce a concert for my BFA, and I had a really, really hard time with it, like a really hard time with the concert, and I struggled with a lot of stuff, and I didn't really understand why I was having such a hard time making up the movement, putting it together. I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do, but I didn't really know. I didn't know how to do it. And I sat down with one of my professors, and she was my first reader on the concert. So a reader is, like, the person that, like, basically, like, they they like kind of like an advisor-esque, yeah. like they walk you through everything, they sit with you, they sit in rehearsal, they come and like check in on rehearsals every once in a while. And she was like, you know, like you need to make, one of the things she said to me is like, how can you make your own movement? You want to tell this story, how can you make movement that tells the story? And I was like, oh, yeah. Because as much as, you know, we'd had to take these composition classes and choreograph pieces every single semester and how to present them, it was more on a lower level. And all of a sudden it was like, you have this big story you want to tell, but like doing pirouettes isn't going to tell this story. Like what movement's going to tell the story? And she really got me thinking in that vein, and she really helped me work through a lot of stuff that was inside me to really come up with this piece and finally work through this story and tell this story on stage. That was very therapeutic for me. So I think that's when I realized like that is something that's very important for me, and realizing like nice. I have to make up my own movement, that one move can help to like, it, you know, be an emotion or tell me something from one move and why that's important. So she definitely helped me realize like that's very important to me, and that's like something I want to do. So, yeah.
I kind of found my voice, oddly, and I still think it's evolving and changing. But
oh, yes. Agreed. It's still evolving and changing.
It definitely started from a theater exercise I was doing, mm-hmm. where it was like they gave us like emotions for the scene, and they were like, cool, well, you can only create shapes around it. And I was like, well, how can these shapes embody like rage mm-hmm. or happiness? And so then it became, you know, like this whole like manipulating the group into these shapes. And these shapes had to do that. And so from kind of like building these shapes, that kind of turned into, well, what if the shape could move? Because we were doing tableaus mm-hmm. at the time yeah. in theater. And so then it was like, well, what if these tableaus can move? And so literally from moving tableaus,
yeah,
I think I found my voice that way, because it doesn't...
I love that exercise. That's actually, I'm going to pocket that exercise for my...
I still use it when
I get stuck. I was going to say, for my stuff. For like myself, and also like for my older kids, like going into next year, my kids that are starting to get a little bit older and having them start to like create, that's a really smart, good way to introduce them.
And well, so like I think the most recent example of doing that is literally my sixth-graders are working on their hip-hop piece from the 90s, and we're using TLC's What About Your Friends.
Yes.
And I wish, like, like I said, they're beginning dancers. Like, a lot of them have never taken dance prior to starting at the school in the fall, this past fall. And so their vocabulary isn't very big. And so you have to get very creative, you know, because they're, as much as what I'm teaching them, I'm just the guest artist that comes in and set the piece. So, like, we just don't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just getting really frustrated and stuck. Like, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to cut this or do. Like, I literally did not know what to do. And I pulled up the video, the original music video from it. And it has this one scene from the chorus where they're all kind of like stuck in this tableau. Mm-hmm. As I'm waiting for it to load, and I go, oh my God, that's it. I just need to make this part of the picture move. So literally, mm-hmm. I just start pulling things off of this picture of the frozen, you know, like a frozen frame, picture frame from the music video. And you know, I finished the dance this week. So
yeah. Yes.
But yeah, like that's a trick that I still go back to, just those strong tableaus.
Yeah, that's really smart.
Yeah, which kind of leads into our next question. Is like, where do you pull inspiration from?
Yeah, I think this is very smart. And anyone says that you shouldn't do this, I think is full of... But I think you pull inspiration from... Well, you can pull from anywhere. You can pull it from a book. You can pull it from a song. But I think a really important one that people are sometimes afraid to say, you pull it from each other. Go to class and you are dancing and you watch other dancers and you experience teachers and choreographers' movement. That's going to inspire you. Or you watch other dances and you're like, wow, that's really cool. I want to do something like kind of based on that now. Mm-hmm. And you take from what you see works. And absolutely, you can be inspired by a song, a story, a book, a movie, all of that stuff. But I think a really important one to not diminish is like you take from each other. Like you
go
look
to
at
class.
The, yeah.
Like I'm definitely one of those people that like, I feel very stagnant. Because again, I've went to college. I am almost 30. So like I've been dancing for X amount of years. No, my students don't have the background to dance what I can dance.
But when I go take a class at my level, it reminds me, oh yeah, what's a lesser version of this?
That is so funny. Like, we literally, in my professional developments or work lately, we literally have been doing that where every week, someone will teach a class at our level, at a professional level, mm-hmm. and then we spend the last 30 minutes of our PD going, okay, now how can you turn that same exact choreography, make it good for a third grader, make it good for a low group of sixth graders, make it work for a high group of eighth graders? What can you do to manipulate it so that you're not setting the bar low, you're actually setting the bar super high? And it's that, yes,
for what's to come.
And it's also that kind of stuff. Again, being in a room with those people, with other dance teachers and choreographers, and we're dancing together and we're talking about different mm-hmm. exercises we use, that's what inspires me.
Like, oh, I completely agree, because I know there's definitely something. A friend of mine who's also a choreographer, Janelle Young, she also asked to be on the show soon. We'll find a way and a time and a topic that works well for her. But she was definitely a good inspiration for being like, I have 40 kindergartners. I don't know what to do with them. She was like, well, patterns and shapes, you know, repetition, you know. And so just like those basic like choreographic things that we learned in class, you know, they often get pushed to the side when you see the giant mountain in front of you, what has to be done.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, like, I would always shy away from repetition in my dances so much. And literally, she's like, they're kids. Like, the chorus, let it be the same.
Yes.
Every time
I realized that, too.
And I was like, oh, that seems like such a cop-out. And she goes, they can't handle more than that.
And it ends up looking good because they actually know how to do it. No, mm-hmm. so I agree. And I think that, same as what you said, whenever I start to feel stagnant and like, I don't know how, I'm like, I go to class because even if the class is in a style that's not what I'm working on, it just still gets my like creative juices, for lack of a better word, flowing.
Oh, completely. Cause I can take a tap class and be like, oh, this rhythm totally works, and use that same rhythm for a hip hop class.
Yes.
Like the connective tissues are definitely there for multiple styles.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that brings us to, well, not the big question of the episode, but I have one more that I didn't pre-warn you about. Sorry.
You're good.
How do you start choreographing? So this comes about from following one of the Facebook groups that I'm on, where I constantly see, this is usually studio owners and choreographers at studios, so I'm calling you guys out for being really bad about this, being like, oh, we have this costume, we need to pick a song and a dance to go with it.
No.
Or they go, this is a song that we're doing, we need a dance for it. Or, you know, we have, like, they always start from really weird places. So my question to you is, how, when it's time to sit down and start choreographing, what do you start with?
It depends. I will either come up with an idea from, like, you know, reading something or seeing something or listening or, you know, watching something, and I'll be like, it would be really cool to make a dance about, like, for instance, I'm thinking, I remember in my advanced composition class in college, one of our assignments was you have to use spoken word during it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what happened. I don't know, but I remember I was out somewhere and I saw like a picture of something from Alice in Wonderland, like the book. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna do a piece where there's a girl, a female, and she's literally reading the book as she's dancing mm-hmm. and depicting the story through her dance, but also reading the book. So things like that inspire me. Like I was given an assignment and then I saw something that was like, oh my gosh, how cool would this be? Or sometimes I do go with music. Like if I hear a piece of music and it's intriguing to me, I'll listen to it over and over and over.
Ooh,
and I mean, like, I'm saying, like, I'm at the gym on the elliptical or the treadmill for 2 miles. And for the entire 2 miles, I just have this song on repeat thinking, is this something I do want to do? Like, why is this song so intriguing to me? And I let it run on repeat. And as it runs, I start to come up with ideas in my head. And then I'm like, either like, no, that's stupid. Or like, yeah, like I'm into this. And like, I really want to make this a piece. And usually though, too, like, I'll be honest, going back to what I said earlier with songs, even if the songs have lyrics to them, it's not those lyrics that are telling me how the dance should look. it's honestly the emotion I'm feeling from the song, how I am relating to the lyrics, that makes me create my own story. And I think that's a very interesting thing, because I think when dance teachers try to go, well, we're gonna be lyrical, and I'm air quoting right now because obviously no one can see me but Tony, when people go, I'm gonna be lyrical and match the exact song to the dance, you can still be lyrical by using the song and the words and the emotions, but like, what does it bring up for you? That's the story.
Yes. I completely agree with that, because I'm also that same person too. Usually it's a song first for me. And I will play the song on like nonstop repeat, but like dance moves aren't the first thing that come to mind. A story does.
Yes.
And so usually I go, and this is why, like, I'm horrible for like actually watching music videos to a lot of the songs that I love, because I get attached to the song first. And I create a story in my head that literally is like, has nothing to do with movement, really.
Yeah.
It's just a story in my head. Like, oh my God, this All American Rejects, the song Move Along.
Yeah.
In my head, I think of four friends going to a fair. And it's their adventures of going to this fair and like hanging out at a carnival. And it's like, so every time I hear the song, I sing of this crazy like carnival stuff.
Yeah.
And then like one day I told somebody about this. And they were like, you know that song is like about breakup and blah, blah, blah. And I go, it is, like, not as if I haven't heard that song billions of times, but it didn't match the story that I created in my head.
Right.
And so it's, so when it came time and to actually be able to use that for choreography, I literally had to use an instrumental version to match what I figured out in my head and to find choreo for it, because I'm like, the lyrics totally don't match at all. I don't need the lyrics. Right. I literally just need the music underneath to fill out the story, you know, of this carnival ride and things like that. So I'm definitely with you. It's one of the things where like the music on repeat informs the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you, like I have to air quote too. Lyrical, I often question, because I feel as if lyrics can build, but they don't build the same thing as dance.
No, I agree. I also, this is something I texted you earlier today. I realized I was working on some choreography today, and I texted you this. I realized I love choreography. I get so excited when I get to do a number with chairs. I don't know why. And the thing is, like, a lot of it's been in musicals. And I realized, like, my favorite numbers to choreograph in musicals have been the ones that revolve around sitting and chairs. And I think it's because there's so much for me. There's so much interesting stuff I can do in the seat. So many pedestrian and minute movements that I can do sitting down that just make the number cooler and better and inform the story. But then I realized, and I had said this to you too, like, so obviously I love doing musical numbers with it. But then I was like, wait, I literally just love choreography, because when I was in college, I did a piece. I think it must have been my junior year. Mm-hmm. And I did a piece for a student showcase with two dancers, and it revolved around chairs. And it was to I'm going to try to look it up. It's to a Ray Charles instrumental.
Nice.
And I can't remember. But, and in my mind, you know, I took the title. I'm pretty sure it was something like Black Coffee or something. And I took the title of the song. I don't know where I heard the song, to be honest. I don't remember where I heard it.
I hear music all over the place. I definitely get that.
Yes, it's called Black Coffee. And I don't know where I heard the song, but I heard it. And I think between the title and the way that it's a jazz piece, I was like, I feel like I should be in a coffee shop right now. And I was like, well, what's important about this coffee shop? And I made this whole piece about how these two strangers met because they sat in chairs next to each other at the coffee shop. And how they interacted. And I remember I like used the chairs, and they would move the chairs and they would get up and they would sit in them. They'd move them around. And I remember being like, I loved that piece and wanting to like revive it in college and like never being able to like make it bigger and make it something better. And thinking about it, I'm like, I love when I get to do a musical with a chair number, with a sitting number. love it. I have so much fun with it that I just, like, there's something to me about using that prop and the pedestrian movement that can surround being in a chair that I just love chairography.
See, when you said that to me, that makes me go, so it's, I have a love for floor work, and I know I totally got that from one of my mentors in college. There's something, like, and it's only after, like, choreographing more outside of college and things like that, that I start to realize, like, why? Because there was, like, I have a strong connection with, like, this struggle of, like, getting out of the bed, laying down, like how we fight so hard to not be lazy or to not be horizontal.
Yeah.
And, like, so, like, that is, cool. I don't know, because I constantly deal with that, like, or, like, that up and down. Like, I feel like it's the only universal struggle that everyone physically understands.
But I was just thinking of this. I don't even know why I thought of this. I also used chairs in my BFA concert. I used 18 chairs on stage. I had no set. It was completely stripped down. It was, like, very, very stripped down, my piece. And it was about stripping down everything, struggling with yourself, fighting to be in control. Like, it was really cool. But I had 18 chairs on stage, and they were black folding chairs. And that was the only prop, the only set piece, the only backdrop of the entire piece. So for me, yeah, I don't know what my relationship is with chairs. I think I'm still figuring it out. And I think as I do these musicals and I'm, like, so excited to work on the numbers that have chairs in them, I don't know. I'm going to have to really think about it. But there's something about a chair. And I think it has to do with the pedestrian movement, the being confined to a seat, being able to get up from it, move it around. Like,
and again, it's maybe something you find slowly, because I know with me, like, I hated learning floor work. I hated, like, I was like, you're getting up and you're down. You struggle. It's like, and now it's so beautiful to me to see how people get up off the floor, how they get down on the floor, how the transition to and from, like, whether you can do it easy, whether you can do it hard, you know, like, how, you know, is it easier for you because you're younger? Is it harder for you because you are, you know, you're taller or you're shorter? Like, I don't know. I finally had to, like, be like, not every piece. So the modern concert I'm doing now,
you're like, everything's on the floor.
Every piece but one has some type of floor.
That's amazing.
It. And literally for that one piece, I was like, okay, you have to challenge yourself to not do it. And I kind of got backed in the corner with one of the choreography spots, and I was like, ooh, well, if we put this phrase, nope, that's the floor phrase. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it.
That's funny, because I actually did. I did a piece in college from a guest artist, and, like, again, I don't know why I am completely blanking on her name. And someone's probably going to write in and know who it is, because basically all of her work she does, she's a modern choreographer, is floor work. And she came in and did a guest piece for us, and I got, you know, we had an audition, and I got into the guest piece. And I also, in college, I was like, I hate floor work. And I think I did this piece my junior year. And I was like, floor work is stupid. It's a cop-out. Like, it's not real dancing. Like, I totally thought that coming from growing up in a studio. And then so we were required to do X number of pieces with guest artists. Mm-hmm. So I got into this piece, which I was like, that's weird. And the entire piece was just floor work. And that, I left that piece and I was like, floor work can be really cool. And you can tell a really cool story with it. And so I don't know. There's something, I agree. There's something I really like about floor work. There's something about, like, that, the chair being on the ground. Like, just that, there's something
for
about
me,
that
very
for me.
Very pedestrian. And what?
Yes.
And I remember, I remember, like, again, the professor was Christy Johnson. And she literally, because I came from the MT world, there is no floor work typically, depending on the show. And so when I started taking her modern class and we're doing cat stretches and all, you know, like, all the basics of floor work and things like that, I struggled with it so hard. And she was like, well, it, you know, because, like, she would even get on to me because, like, I was blatantly almost rude. Being like, I hate it. Like, it feels so gross to my body. She's like, say it feels uncomfortable to your body or that it's new, but, like, keep going.
Yeah.
And then, like, I remember after taking her class for, like, 2-3 semesters, she was like, thought she said you hate it. You know? And I'm like, oh, no, I love everything about it.
I know.
It,
if my professors were to, like, see me now, they'd be like, you know, you're on the floor. There's always a floor section in my pieces. I'm like, I know. Like, it was something that I, and again, I think for me, floor work was about losing control. For some reason, I associated with being on the floor is not being in control. And I struggled with that when I was younger. And that was a lot of, like, again, dance is therapy, guys. Dance, yes. Dance is therapy.
I think for me is that, like, I always, like, what I found so difficult about ballet for me is because I was always tall and I was always lanky. So, like, tall, lanky, and awkward, totally me. So, like, keeping the strong, clean, straight lines were so difficult to me because I was so tall that I always had long limbs that were hitting other people. So, like, I'd always try to shrink into myself. And floor work was all about flowing motion and circular and moving and it always contorting and expanding and contracting. And so, like, it constantly kept flowing and moving and curving to where, you could be this crazy tall, long dancer and you're, you know, and smooth in and out of this crazy floor section. So, I don't know. I definitely know that it's, and again, dance is probably therapy. Like, it made me not feel long and awkward.
Yeah. I think that's it. And I think what we said before, like, our styles are always still evolving. And I think, like, you talked about, like, the floor is very important to you. I talked about, like, for some reason, a chair is super important to me. I love working with chairs. And I think that if you're a choreographer and you're trying to, like, find your voice, if there is something that seems to speak to you, and even though if you don't know why, like, go with it.
Yes.
Because I just started to realize, like, I really like having this prop. I really like moving to and from the prop, using the prop. So, like, it's okay if you can't define why it's so important to you, but, like, that's part of finding your voice is, like, this is something that works well for me. Like, just keep going with it. So, encourage, like, everyone out there who's, you know, just go with it and see what happens.
And literally, I'm definitely agree with finding your voice because it's just, it's one of those things of, like I said, I took in all the choreography classes in college to where they're definitely, you know, like, use a painting, you know?
Yeah,
like, use
this, all of those.
I've heard all the crazy exercises of where to find inspirations and where things speak to you. And everyone I know usually is something different. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own kind of style that's different, that kind of stands out, you know? So you never know where it's going to come from.
Yes.
So our last question that came about from an article in Dance Magazine, and it talks about, you can read the article yourself, but the point that I really want to talk about is the opening topic for the title for the piece was, should dancers get credit for choreography? Mm. And generally speaking, I'm going to say no.
Yeah. I agree.
And here's my reasoning behind it. And I have been both the dancer in this situation and the choreographer in this situation. As a dancer, I've definitely been in a piece where the choreographer saw me, saw how tall I was, saw how strong I was. So the choreography definitely molded to my strength. Mm-hmm. So there were several more lifts and partner sections added in that, you know, had previously not been a part of the choreo. Or because I have such training in floor work, there was like a couple roles and extra things put into that and things like that. Like all of that kind of happened because it was me, because specifically I was one of the dancers mm-hmm. part of the piece. In no way, shape, or form did I feel like I choreographed anything. I did would be like, oh, well, this is what I know how to do. Can I show you this? Do you want to use this or not? And a couple times he said yes. But the dancer doesn't sit down and plan out the piece from start to finish.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is, like, because I've definitely been in the situation where I've choreographed a piece and then I go to put it on the dancer. And this happens more so with solos. If all of a sudden I'm like, wow, you know what, they actually can't do this. Or, you know what, I could see now that I'm working with them, like, their body would look really cool if we do this. Or they tell me this is really uncomfortable. And we work together to find, like, the ground, the space, you know, we'll do a couple things where we work together and go, well, why don't we try this together? How does this feel on you? But you as the dancer did not sit down and plan it. I still came in with the intent. I still came in with the story and the motion and the vision. So even if we did have to mold it and move things and scrap some stuff and put some new stuff in, and even if you were there next to me and we did a bunch of stuff together, it's still my vision, it's still my story, it's still my intent. And so I think that that it's yeah, it's just, it's the choreographers.
And I do, to the credit of this conversation, because this is not a new conversation to be having among dancers and choreographers. Because I've definitely been in situations, more on the theater side, where, like, I take it back. As I've gotten older, I've learned to start questioning whether it's the director choice, a choreographer choice, or the actor choice when I see, or dancer choice when I see certain things. Because there have been moments where I've seen a musical or a dance concert where I go, that made no sense, or that just did not look good.
Yeah.
And then I had to be like, okay, well, the dancer probably didn't have that much choice in this particular situation. So, okay, that falls to either the director or the choreographer. Mm-hmm. And typically speaking, most choreographers are responsible for all movements in a musical.
Yeah.
So whether it be walking patterns, you know, or just blocking sometimes, the choreographer still has to sign off on that movement. So literally I was like, oh, well, this choreographer made a horrible choice, that this dancer did the best that they could with it. But it still just didn't fit the story or the intent behind it.
But that's when you have to be a smart choreographer and go, this doesn't look good on my dancers.
Yes.
How can we take intent, the same storyline, and fix it so it looks good on the dancers? But again, that's still all on the choreographer. So whether the dance ends up being bad or good, the credit, the bad credit or the good credit, I think has to lie on the choreographer, and they have to be held accountable, because a smart choreographer will mold their movement and change it to fit dancers.
Oh, completely. And I think that's, it also, like, name recognition also plays a large part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Susan Strom, who's got more Tony Awards than she knows what to do with, is a big, huge Broadway choreographer and director choreographer. And you, when it's her choreo, one, you can very clearly tell her voice. She loves long, big, beautiful lines.
Yes, she does.
And I remember what show was. It might have been Young Frankenstein,
I think? She did Young Frankenstein.
She, that she was working on, where everyone kind of talked about how, like, you can tell that it's a Susan Stroman choreo. You know, like,
you knew it was her off the bat.
Yeah, like, there was, like, you knew it was her. You knew it was her off the bat. And she had fabulous dancers that made it very clear that it was doing her work. But no one really cared out of that ensemble. But then someone's like, oh, yeah, Sutton Foster dancing her stuff really brings it to light. You know, like, it really sells it. And then it became, you know, well, Sutton Foster doing Susan Stroman's choreography. And so it's the same kind of thing when you have a big name choreographer, it really, the credit's not going to fall on that dancer.
No.
They're only going to say whether the dancer was capable or not capable.
And
really,
I will say, I saw a Broadway show last year. It's not on Broadway anymore. And is a very famous choreographer who has a couple of Tonys now, and rightfully so. And their other work has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super smart. And I think it's a really good mix of dancey and pedestrian and telling it at the right time. However, for this particular show, I was sitting there watching it and I was like, this does not go with this show, this story at all. And I will say this, to be fair, there were a lot of other flaws in the musical. The book was not fleshed out. The characters were not fleshed out. It had a really weak ending. Like, there were a lot of other flaws within the musical, within the show itself. But I just was like, dude, like, you have multiple Tonys, and this choreography, it was either way too dancey when it shouldn't have been, or it was way too pedestrian when it needed it to be more dancey.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't sure what was going on there. And I was like, I don't know, you got paid how much money to do this?
Right. Well, that also, it's funny that you mentioned that. It was another Broadway show from a huge choreographer in the both dance, like, concert dance world and the theater world. And everyone loves this musical. And everyone, like, saw the musical. He won a Tony Award for his choreography. And everyone was super confused because it was just a lot of jumping around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I was just like, well, maybe he had bad dancers. I saw, looked the cast up, and I was like, no, I actually knew some of the understudies and covers.
I
dance with them. So I was like, I know you have minimal dance talent.
Yeah, I know, now that I know what you're talking about, I know a lot of people who were in that show, like, a lot of people, like some really close friends of mine growing up were in that show.
Yep.
And they could, some of them weren't dancers, but they could all move.
Yes.
Super fine.
Same thing that my friend that I grew up with danced together with.
I've seen them dance in other shows.
Same. So when that happened, I literally had to go, oh, well, no, it's really him that made those kind of choices. And I think that's another reason why dancers should give credit for being able to execute choreography well, but it doesn't fall on you to choreograph it to be...
No.
The blame's not going to fall on you for bad choreography.
And you should take that as like a thing that you don't have to worry about.
As a blessing.
Yes. I couldn't think of the word.
I think that's the problem that I have with the should dancers get credit for choreography question is because as a dancer, as a performer, your job is simply that to perform. Connect with the material, mm-hmm. connect with the backstories and things behind it, and share it with the audience. It's the choreographers and the director and all the other people on the other side of the table that have to run around like crazy mm-hmm. saying, are we showing this clearly? Are we executing this clearly? Do we have the dancers and actors to execute everything that we want clearly? Is the audience interpreting it the right way? Are they completely missing the mark? Are we completely missing the mark? Like the amount of behind the scenes craziness that a choreographer has to do, a dancer doesn't.
Right.
A dancer doesn't happen. Like I know particular, so ABT mm-hmm. is about to have their third black choreographer mm-hmm. or in the history of, no, in the last 30 years, let me not say that, in the last 30 years. I'm pretty sure it was Dance Magazine as well that was interviewing him and they were like, do you feel the extra pressure, you know, mm-hmm. being, you know, that it's been nearly 20 to 30 years, I'm not exactly sure, I know it's one of the two, but I'm not sure which one, since there's been, another choreographer of color, do you feel that you need to set this, how do you feel about setting this piece? Or like, who should you set this piece? Your work is very activist driven, mm-hmm. so like, how do you feel about all this? He was like, oh yeah, there's definitely a pressure and a weight to all of this, of they're a ballet company and I'm more of a jazz company, jazz, modern, contemporary. He's like, so like, do I meet them where they're at? Do I combine them? How far do I push them? He was like, on top of the fact of if this goes great, there will be, hopefully there'll be more choreographers of color, that come in on a regular basis versus if this goes horribly, they may not, and he's like, there are already people that are going to have natural prejudice.
Yeah.
But then when you add in like the dance things could go really right or really wrong, mm-hmm. you're kind of backed into a corner again. And I think that is where that's the complication, that like a dancer, you don't have to think about all of those things, but like, because those dancers in the company, you were either picked to do the dance or you weren't. And you're either going to perform it to the best of your abilities. Yeah. But literally, rarely do you see a headline that the dancers were not adequate enough to do the choreo. It's usually, that was bad choreo.
Yeah. And you just have to be, as a dancer, like, again, if you don't agree for some reason with the choreography, it's either, like, you don't agree with it and it's going to look great, and so don't worry about it, or you don't agree with it and it's not going to look great, and then it's still going to be the choreographer's fault. So just take a deep breath and realize your job is to perform it, to execute the story, mm-hmm. and to, to like be the presence.
You just have to trust yourself and your choreographer, one. Like, that's my thing. I never say do anything to hurt or harm your body.
Absolutely.
But you have to trust your choreographer enough to be like, this is what the piece is. It may feel weird to me, but then it'll look great. Like, I've been there as a dancer and a choreographer where I'm like, trust me, you may feel ridiculous and horrible when you do it, but to the audience, it's going to be an amazing piece. And that has paid off. So I think it doesn't change even on the larger scales. You have to put that faith and trust in the choreographer.
I agree.
So that being said, that rolls us right along to our next segment, called I'm Sorry, What Did You Just Say? This segment is all about the funny and awkward moments we have with our students as dance teachers, choreographers, and sometimes just people. If you'd like to share some of your favorite moments with your students with us, you can email us at pytnyc29@gmail.com.
I'm going to take this one this week. So I told one of my classes this week, we talked about doing a lot of, I'll record them doing their dance and they have to watch it and critique themselves, and then we have to do it again and record it, and they have to watch it again, talk about what you see different, all that good stuff. And I told them this week, I was like, we have to work. Oh, someone brought up, they were like, I think we need to work on the ending. And I was like, we do. And I was like, the ending of this dance is so important, because at this point you are really super confident and you're happy and you need to emote that and you need to be all together to show this beautiful movement and how powerful it's going to look all together. And I said, also, it's super important because you guys are the last dance of the show. You're the grand finale. You're the last thing that your parents and your families and your friends and your teachers are going to see and remember. And they went nuts. Oh my God, nice. Really? That's so amazing. And then at like the end of the day, I was like in somebody in one of my coworkers' classrooms, and a mom came to pick up her daughter, and her daughter was like, Mom, we're the grand finale. It's so cool. And like just freaking out. And I was like, you know what? Like, whatever can get them more excited and more focused, true, like, I will take it. So yeah, they're funny and cute. They're silly.
Yeah, I'm sorry what moment goes from my eighth graders came in, and we're like, they're changing, getting ready to start class, and we're missing like four people. And we're like, well, where's the rest of your class? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, blah, blah, hit her head on the stairs. And so she has a concussion.
Oh, does
and
she?
And I go, I'm sorry. Literally, I said, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
She was like, oh, yeah, like, she's at home, like, because, like, they had to call the ambulance, and I was like, I'm literally at this school 4 days a week, and the one day that I'm not here, the ambulance is called twice, because not only did I have one of my girls bump her head, another one of my students broke his arm.
Amazing.
So the ambulance had to be called twice. Also, another one of my eighth grade dancers that was out and missing, and I'm literally like, why are we all breaking ourselves so close
like,
to recital?
Yeah, what's going on, people?
Like, literally, I was like, why are we breaking ourselves so close to recital? Because that became the next thing, is that people thought it was us in dance. And literally they were like, oh, what happened on Tuesday? And I'm like, guys, I'm not in on Tuesday. Like, they don't have dance on Tuesday. So literally all of these injuries have nothing to do with dance.
Yeah.
And they were all like, oh, really?
Like,
yes, yeah, I don't break these children.
Yeah, they just need to like get it together because I need them though for dance for the recital.
Well, concussion girl, she is fine.
Great.
She's back. She danced all week. Broken arm is in a cast and like is currently in an argument with mom about like what can he do in the show still. And doctor's like, well, by the time the show arrives, he should be in a better spot. To where he'll probably be out of the hard cast and then soft cast. So, like, there are options. He was like, you probably can't do anything with that specific arm, but he could still do other things.
Yeah.
And so that's a battle that literally I'm just staying out of.
Yeah, I have one of my girls. She's in second grade, and she's in my second grade dance club. She broke her foot, and so I have to figure out a way that she can still, like, be in the dances. Because, of course, she's now in two dances. And kind of do choreography,
yeah,
but like a smart way. And she's also in second grade though, so I was like, of course, like, just couldn't have.
But now that you said that,
and
like,
she's been trying to dance with her boot on. She's like, I can do the dance with my boot on. And I was like, listen, if it hurts, I was like, the second it hurts, you sit down. But then I also was like, if she can do it in her boot, like, girl, you're gonna do it in your boot.
Well, I'm also, like, I really want to do a wheelchair number. I don't know why. Like, I really want to do a wheelchair number that's coming up. But I'm also, like, need to find a school that's going to let me, you know, like, have, like, 10 wheelchairs number. Or, like, to get 10 wheelchairs.
Right.
So, we'll see. But, you know, we can dream.
Yes.
So, once again, if you'd like to share some of your stories with us for I'm Sorry What, feel free to email us at pytnyc29@gmail.com. That's pytnyc29@gmail.com. And that brings us right along to our shout-outs. So, I'm going to start first for this one.
I got nothing, so live your best life. I am, though, taking class tomorrow night, I would just like to say. So, next week I will. I actually think I'm taking three classes this week between, like, PDs and stuff. So, I got you covered
nice.
For next
yes,
week.
Yes, because I have shows this week, so no class for me next week. Or maybe. We'll see. But, like, this week it's insanely crazy.
So this shout out, it's the same as last week, kind of, is that my students had a performance at Hunter College here in New York City. And Hunter's College is a teaching college for dance teachers and choreographers. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all about, you know, pumping out
amazing dance teachers and choreographers. In general, Hunter is an amazing school for education. So be it dance and choreography, but also I know, like, one of my really good friends, my coworker, she did her MA, she did grad school for mm-hmm. education at Hunter. And I just know that Hunter's all about teaching. They are an amazing educational school.
And what was so very cool about this particular concert is that it was two middle school groups, and mine was one of them, and then everything was undergrads.
Yeah.
And so, right, like, the, you know, dress rehearsal and tech run beforehand, like, the warm-up on stage. So it was also fun to, like, so for the warm-up, all the choreographers were on stage warming up with the kids. So, like, we were dancing right alongside them.
Yeah.
And so it was the first time that my kids have gotten to actually dance with me. So that was, they really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But I really just have to give a shout out to, like, programs like that, to where it was so cool talking to a lot of the majors there, be it undergrad or master's program, being like, oh, so, like, how, you know, have you finished the program yet? And they're like, oh, yeah, I've already been assigned my school. Like, yeah, you know, this is where I'm going in the fall. I'm super nervous. And we're all like, yeah, we got you. If you need help, these are our emails. You know, like, reach out to us. Like, so it's just really nice to see this for a college to literally be a community and group for, like, the same thing that, like, a lot of us are out here doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or just even the same struggles. Like, I know a couple of the electives teachers that were there, we were all kind of ranting about, like, the amount of field trips that the DOE allows the students to take at the end of the school year, yeah, and how, like, mm-hmm, honestly, New York schools could be out of school in May instead of June.
Yeah, I literally have, like, but I'm missing half of my classes this week. They're all on field trips. It's fine. Our dance show's in 3 weeks. It's fine.
Yep. But that's, literally June. We had to send, like, a kind of, like, angry email to our principal and our assistant principal just to get our show date. Because we go, if we don't, and we're still probably going to have kids missing for our dress rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, if we don't do it this date, we're going to have no show. And right, then I literally had to be like, and the entire budget that you wasted bringing me in will be, have gone to waste. Okay. And that's when they were like, oh, wait, budget. And that's when things kind of, mm-hmm, like, we finally got their attention.
Always.
And they realized, like, how packed the calendar was for June. Yep. To their credit, the rest of the year, they don't really go on field trips like that. It's just June.
So, yeah, because it's, like, they have to. I think it is, like, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like they have to go on, like, X amount of field trips a year. And so, they always happens that they always get pushed to the end of the year because they're, like, busy with academics and art and dance and sports and music concerts
and
testing. And then testing is over. And once testing's over in May, yes, they're like, great, we'll do all the field trips.
Go to all the places. And some of them, yeah, I don't know how true this is, but I can definitely see the pattern with my school as well. And several public schools, simply because an aquarium trip that the science department does, they do, like, an event in Central Park. So, like, all of these are things that can't really be done until the weather is warmer anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that definitely makes me go, oh, yeah, all of this is going to happen at the end of the year, whether I want it to or not.
Yes.
Plan accordingly.
Yes. But back to your point, I agree. I think that, like, that's awesome, your shout out. And I think that if anyone, mm-hmm, is getting ready to look at schools for undergrad or their master's, I think that if you want to, because I didn't know much about their dance program until you were telling me, Tony, but I know about their just education program because I have friends that did their master's there. And I think that if dance education is really something that you're like, I want to be a dance teacher, I want to be a dance educator, or create, you know, a community, you know, theatrical or dance educational program, mm-hmm, I think Hunter is an amazing place to look at.
And the New York, specifically, like, if you want to be in New York City, New York City Department of Education, or DOE,
mm-hmm,
they are specifically offering scholarships to MFA student, to master's candidates,
right,
that do the program at Hunter, and allow them to assign them to schools around New York City afterwards.
And I think just, like, that's so smart.
I met, like, four teachers.
That's amazing, but also so smart because as a master's candidate, then you're already working in the field and creating those connections that hopefully you'll just have a job to go to the second...
The minute you graduate.
So I definitely, yeah. So
I met a young lady that was literally, she's graduating next weekend, I think. And she had her interview with her principal.
Yeah.
This past week, and she found out the day before, like, interview on Monday, she found out on Friday that she'd been hired for this coming fall.
That's amazing.
So, like, she literally just, like, has not technically graduated yet.
And already has a job.
You know, already has a contract.
Yeah.
Lined up to teach. You know, she's like, I know the school. Like, I think she had some cousins that went there. So, like, she's going to be teaching dance at a high school.
Amazing. So, again, if you are interested in dance education and educational theater and dance, Hunter College in New York City. Look it up.
Well, that's it for us. The curtain has closed on this episode, but we hope that you will join us next week.
And every week after that.
We want to say thank you to our listeners.
Our numbers keep growing, and that's all thanks to you.
Episodes come out every Tuesday.
You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, Blurberry, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Play Music.
Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.
iTunes and Google Play Music are perfect places to do that.
You can find us on Facebook at Point Your Toes. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at PointPYT.
You can email us at PYTNYC29@gmail.com.
I'm your co-host, Tony Williams II.
And I'm your co-host, Danielle Colangelo.
See you next week on Point Your Toes, the adventures of an NYC dance team.